from her, telling us what's happening in this department. Some of us welcome it, others welcome it even more. To our observers in this meeting, we would like to welcome you as well. It is important for us as members of this select committee on trade and industry and international relations that we are always informed on who our visitors are. So we would kindly request that before we introduce our colleagues from DTI, that we give an opportunity for our visitors to just tell us maybe what your name is and what institution it is that you're from. Please.
My name is Chelsea. I'm from PMG, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, I'm Kristen Greenock from Standard Bank.
My name is Johannes Stander, and my wife is Jane, and we represent a company called Standard, AJ Stander and Associates, and we are from Port Elizabeth. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jane Stander. As my husband mentions, we are consultants, and we are very privileged to be attending your meeting this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, we have two apologies. The first is from our Director General, Mr. Lionel October. Like the performance of DTI, it's not just a telephone conversation that I had with him yesterday, but we have a formal letter here from him, setting a good example for the other DTs as well. The reason why he's not here is because his daughter has been admitted to hospital. And as a responsible parent and father, he felt it important to be with her. I assume that that's understandable to all of us. The second apology that I have is from our whip of the select committee, Honorable George Mjimunya. He phoned me and then also sent me an SMS last night. He's my neighbor in the village, and he had to go to back home in Mpumalanga because of a family emergency. Respectfully, I did not inquire more about the content of the emergency. Honorable Lont.
Thank you, Chair. Just apology on behalf of the Honourable Elsa van Linden. One of our colleagues in one of the other committees is seriously ill, and Elsa is an Honourable van Linden is an alternate, so she'll be sitting in on that committee because there's a clash between the committees. But luckily, she's got representatives from her province as well as from her party who will raise their views here.
Thank you very much. I may just have to add that Honorable van Lingen did raise it with me 2 weeks or more ago that they're having this challenge within the party that she's representing here, and she would have to decide which one of the two select committees she attends. I also want to welcome with us, and I'm going to ask him to introduce himself, the person that is standing in for Honorable Zondi, which is one of our permanent members here, but is also frail at the moment. Can we ask you please, Honorable Member?
Thanks, Chair. My name is Mdomuche Kaula, NCOP-KZN.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kaula. Colleagues, we have before us, unlike how we do it in the other committee, the minutes of the last meeting. I would want to request that we go through that minutes before we introduce our colleagues from DTI and give over to them. On page one,
Sorry, Chairperson, I would just like to know if we have the privilege to have our Deputy Minister, because I don't see any of the ministers or Deputy Ministers here, if there's perhaps an apology from their side.
We have not received a formal apology, but we do know that our Minister is in the UK on a... What do they call this thing? Something BRICS. There's something... But the minister himself is in the UK. The deputy minister, we know, is leading a delegation of 59 business people from South Africa, and he's in China. Guys have not been able to get this thing to work yet, so I don't know where to sit. So I'll sit here in the meantime just so that it helps that we could see each other. The minutes of the last meeting. Honorable?
Seeking your indulgence, would it not rather be better if we sort of take the minutes and take them after the presentation by the department?
Do we have support for that? Okay. There's a problem when you are a Democrat, you see, and sometimes I feel I should be a dictator. Can we welcome our colleagues from the Department of Trade and Industry that's here. The Director General, Mr. October, informed me that they will make sure that they send a capable colleague to stand in for him. And though there are very many in DTI, they felt that it would help us because many of us concentrate on the financial aspects of the report, that they delegate Mr. Shabir Khan, who's here on my left, and he is the chief financial officer, and he comes here with the full support of the other members of the management within DTI to do this presentation to us. We will give over to you, Mr. Khan, and it's for you to decide how you go about with the introduction of your colleagues. But welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, I will ask my colleagues on my right to introduce themselves, and then we'll go straight into the presentation thereafter.
Good morning. My name is Malebo Mavise-Thompson, Deputy Director General responsible for Incentive Administration and Design in the Department of Trade and Industry.
Morning to the members. My name is Tafiwa Samanga, the Chief Director for Beneficiation in the Industrial Development Division.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members. My name is Stephen Hannibal. I'm the Chief Economist at the DTI.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Sarah Chwane. I'm heading the Corporate Services Division of the DTI. Thanks.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning to the members of the committee. I am Kolelwa Mlumbibida, the Acting Deputy Director General for the International Trade and Economic Development Division of the DTI.
Good morning, honourable members, chairs and colleagues. My name is Rishni Pillai. I'm the Director of Strategic Planning in the Office of the DG.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Lisos Teto from the Broadening Participation Division, Director in the Office of the DDG. Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Leso Kholokwete. I'm the Deputy Director responsible for Strategy and Reporting.
Good morning. I'm Renaud Pollet. I'm the Deputy Director in Strategy and Performance Monitoring in the Office of the DG.
Thank you very much and welcome.
To kick off the presentation, we have introduced ourselves, so I will head straight into the presentation. If all the members and the visitors can confirm, I do have a spare copy of a hard copy if everyone has one. Okay. So heading into the presentation, we will start off looking at the state of the economy, as this provides context into the work that the DTI does. So looking at the global economy, in the first quarter of 2014, global GDP growth has slowed from 3.4% in the fourth quarter in 2013 to 2.1% in the first quarter of 2014. This was primarily due to a 2.1% contraction of the GDP in the U.S., and slowing growth in China and the European Union. In the second quarter of 2014, there was a slight recovery as the U.S. economy rebounded slightly and grew by 4% on an annualized quarter-on-quarter basis. However, economic conditions in the EU worsened, with Germany surprisingly contracting. We also providing a slide which presents the GDP figures for the EU, the US, China, and Japan year on year. The IMF expects world growth output to rebound in the second quarter of 2014 and be firmer in 2015 and 16. The IMF further projects that imports by advanced economies will grow by 1.4% per annum in 2013 to 4.6% per annum in 2015. Overall, the economic growth outlook remains weak with significant downside risks. On the domestic front, real GDP grew by 0.6% in the second quarter of 2014. This was led by the tertiary sector, mainly government services, finance, real estate and business services, transport, storage and communication services. The manufacturing sector contracted by 2.1% in the second quarter of 2014 due to low production in autos, chemical products, rubber and plastics, glass and non-metallic mineral products. The contraction in manufacturing was primarily due to the slow pickup in the mining sector after the prolonged strike in the platinum sector. There's also a slide on the South African quarterly GDP numbers, and you can see the slow growth in 2014, which I've mentioned, of 0.6%. Looking at South Africa's trade with the rest of the world, South Africa's exports and imports to the world declined in the second quarter of 2014. However, the decline in imports led to an improvement in South Africa's trade deficit. South Africa's exports to Africa increased from 70.2 billion to 71.9 billion, resulting in a trade surplus of $39.5 billion with the rest of the continent. South Africa's trade with the world and BRICS were affected by poor growth in the EU and the US. Demand for commodities and commodity prices remained relatively flat as China's policymakers attempted to rebalance the economy. South Africa's trade with Africa consequently remains a priority focus for the DTI. There's a slide as well with South Africa's trade with the rest of the world, but going ahead, we start to look at the strategic goals of the department. There are 5 strategic goals of the department. The first one is to promote industrial development, investment, competitiveness, and employment creation. The second one is to advance Africa's trade, industrial policy, and economic development objectives. The third one is to facilitate broad-based economic participation through targeted interventions to achieve more inclusive growth. The fourth one is to create a fair regulatory environment that enables investment, trade, and enterprise development. The last one is to promote a professional and customer-focused working environment that ensures effective and efficient service delivery. The structure of DCI's work is in the following areas, in the following broad clusters. The first one is industrial development, which is the core focus area of the DCI's work. The next area is trade, investment, and exports. The next one is broadening participation. Then the fourth one is regulation, and the last one, administration. Going into the key achievements against plan targets for the 2013-14 financial year, looking at the first cluster of work, which is industrial development, the 6th iteration of IPEP was successfully launched in April 2013, and implementation reports were produced. The new SADS local verification office was officially launched in July 2013 with new technical instruments. The revised National Industrial Participation Program guidelines were also approved, effectively closing existing loopholes with respect to multiplier calculations. We also concluded local content verification for all transversal contracts in the clothing, textile, and footwear tenders. This was to gauge compliance with the designation instructions. The total investment attracted in the auto sector amounted to 16 billion rand. Since the designation of buses, 300 buses have been procured with local requirements as set out in the designation instruction note. Some of the key contracts include Mercedes-Benz South Africa's successful tender to provide 134 buses for the BRT system, Volvo SA's successful tender to provide 40 new vehicles to the city of Cape Town for its extended MyCity bus routes, and MAN supplying 18 new commuter buses to Great North Transport. The Automotive Supply Chain Competitiveness Initiative, a partnership between government, labor, and business, was also launched in October 2013. Some of the further highlights include Mercedes-Benz escalating its total investment in South Africa to more than 5 billion rand, underpinning an increase in its local output to 100,000 units a year and creating 800 new jobs. Production of the new C-Class has already started at the Mercedes East London plant and will slowly ramp up from the current 250 units to full 420 units a day. General Motors South Africa, in partnership with component manufacturer Tenneco SA, has awarded a 6 billion rand contract to export catalytic converters to North America. Also part of the 2013-14 family planning tender, worth an estimated 100 million rand, has been designated. Significant progress has been made in the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Procurement Program, with the Department of Energy approving 19 bids in the second round of the solar, photovoltaic, wind, small hydro, and concentrated solar power sectors. Transnet has also announced its intention to purchase more than 1,000 locomotives at an estimated value of 50 billion rand. The Transnet contract commits locomotive manufacturers to a target of 65% local content over time, and these will create and preserve approximately 30,000 jobs. Approximately 3,233 unemployed learners enrolled for training, and 2,417 were placed to increase a pool of agents suitable for middle management in the Monyetla Work Readiness Program. The film Long Walk to Freedom was produced at a cost of 239 million rand, which was premiered and released countrywide in November 2013
earning more than 23 million rand at the box office to become the highest grossing film in the country. In agro-processing, the DTI, in collaboration with Buchler, launched the innovative Isikhayo plant in April 2013. The clothing and textile competitiveness improvement program has also stabilized the sector, and much progress has been made since the launch of the program. During the year, 44 applications were received to the value of 645 million under the competitiveness improvement program, with 77.7 million rand already dispersed. 777 approvals have been made to date under the production incentive program to the value of 2.2 billion rand. Since the inception of this program, 63,311 jobs have been saved and 8,459 new jobs created. Some of the other highlights in this sector include two new regional footwear clusters having been established under the National Leather and Footwear Cluster Initiative. The first one is a fast track cluster in KwaZulu-Natal and the Southern Cape Regional Footwear Cluster, which is Watson's. Moving along, the SEZ Bill was passed by both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. The bill has since become law in May 2014, which enables the creation of new industrial hubs and bringing previously marginalized regions into the mainstream of the national economy. In the last financial year, a new IDZ was designated as Saldanha Bay in October 2013. Also, there were pre-feasibility studies completed in Thubatse in Limpopo and Upington in the Northern Cape, whilst others are in the process of being finalized. In the previous financial year, an application for designation had been submitted to the Manufacturing Development Board in respect of Dubai Trade Port. Dubai Trade Port has since been designated in October this year. The next slide provides an overview of the incentive schemes. This one provides a high level of the manufacturing incentive program and also provides an indication of the number of projects supported with the potential jobs supported during the last financial year. You'll see our biggest incentives, it's around the manufacturing incentives, and you'll see that's where the largest bulk of the budget lies. Moving along, the next few slides provide a provincial spread of the different incentive schemes. The first slide provides an overview of the broadening participation incentives. This includes the Black Business Supply Development Program, the Cooperatives, and the Incubator Support Program. You'll see on this program, there's quite a nice spread of costs across the country, and you'll see currently we're supporting projects in all provinces. The next slide provides indicates the provincial spread under for the manufacturing incentive program. Here you will see that a lot of the manufacturing incentives are still concentrated in your large areas in Gauteng, KZN, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. In Eastern Cape, you'll see there's a large uptake in the automotive incentive scheme. In the annual report, page 6 of the annual report, page 6. Moving on to slide 23, this slide provides a high-level overview of the MCEP provincial performance in 2012-13 and 2013-14. Indicates the number of projects approved per province. The next broad area is the broadening participation incentive. Here also, this slide provides the number of projects supported under this program, as well as the total disbursements. Slide 25 provides also indicates the BBSDP, which is the Black Business Supplier Development Program application approved in the 2013-14 financial year per province. And the next one is the CIS application approved per province in the 2013-14 financial year. The CPFP Assistance Program, which is a capital project feasibility program, this is where the department provides funding for feasibility studies for projects across the continent. You will note that we have supported a number of projects or feasibility studies across the continent. Slide 28 provides MEA provincial performance also across the provinces. And you will also note there's a high uptake in the Western Cape province, primarily due to the wine exports across the world. Slide 29 presents some of the achievements under the BPS and film achievements. As I've mentioned, the Nelson Mandela film, which has done Long Walk to Freedom, which has done exceptionally well at the box office, which has grossed 23 million rand to date. Moving along to the next strategic objective of the department, which is to advance South Africa's trade, industrial policy, and economic development objectives. Under the SADC services negotiations, we have submitted South Africa's offers on financial and communication services. We are also in the process of identifying measures through bilateral and multilateral cooperation to promote compliance with SADC trade protocol. Under SACU, we are currently prioritizing the need for high-level bilateral engagement in SACU, which includes the heads of states. We are also working on the implementation of the five-point plan, which includes a review of the revenue-sharing model and the implementation of the cross-border projects and programs. Currently, SACU continues to engage as one in negotiation with all third parties. Under the TFTA, negotiations are still ongoing. We, however, have reached consensus on the scope of the trade in goods negotiations, which is phase one. Substantial progress on the legal test negotiations have been made, and a number of annexes have been agreed upon. For example, the annex on customs cooperation and also SPS. On AU and NEPAD, there was engagement with stakeholders through NEDLAC to finalize guidelines on good business practice for South African companies operating in the African continent. On the African bilateral program, we have concluded three MOUs on the economic cooperation with Ghana, Benin, and Nigeria. We have also drafted the MOU on automotive cooperation between South Africa and Nigeria. Some of the other highlights in the trade area includes concluding and implementing the South African-Cuba Agreement on Economic Assistance. On AGOA, we are still lobbying for South Africa's inclusion in AGOA, and we are also looking at an extension of AGOA for another 15 years. With regard to the WTO, the 9th Ministerial Conference was held in Bali in December last year. South Africa has not tabled its commitments as yet. This was subject to inclusion of discussions in the WTO on trade facilitation agreements. During the year, we also facilitated exports of 3.4 billion rand. 1,000 companies were trained on the Global Exporter Passport Initiative to enhance their export readiness. We have also obtained third position for the best stand in the Mozambique FATSAM in August 2013. We have also terminated the EU bilateral investment treaties, and as well we published the draft promotion and protection of investment bill for public comment. On the investment front, we've got an investment pipeline of 60.5 billion rand with a potential of creating 34,560 jobs. The major projects were in manufacturing, mining, and the green economy. Total investment attracted in the green industry sector amounted to approximately 10 billion rand. Multinationals have affirmed South Africa as a hub and a gateway into the continent with new investments and expansions in the manufacturing sector. These include Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Samsung, Hisense, FAW, Iveco, amongst others. Domestic companies such as Aspen, Impact, Amcar, Gibela Rail have expanded or added new investment. The next slide provides some of the automotive and 12i achievements in 2013-14 year. For example, Mercedes-Benz, Gibela, Bevcom, etc. Moving on to the third area of our work, which is the broadening participation division. During the last financial year, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act, Amendment Act, was assented by the President. The BBBEE Code of Good Practice was approved by the Minister and published for implementation in 2015. Through the CDAF Technology Program, 432 new small and medium enterprises were created and 1,587 SMEs supported. Currently, 42 incubators countrywide support SMEs in various industrial sectors. The National Informal Business Strategy was approved by Cabinet and launched by the Minister in Port St. John's in March 2014. The Cooperative Amendment Act 2013 was assented by the President in August 2013 and provides for the creation of the Cooperative Development Agency, with its primary role being to provide support for the development and capacity building of cooperatives, as well as the cooperative tribunal to look at resolving disputes. The Integrated SMEs and Cooperative Development Framework and Action Plan has been approved by MINMAC and the Minister. The Isibande Women Fund supported 16 projects. We've also supported 322 companies participating in the Workplace Challenge. We have revised the draft National Strategic Framework on Gender and Women Empowerment. The Youth Enterprise Development Strategy was approved and launched by the Minister in November 2013. On the fourth area of our work, which is the regulatory part, the Lotteries Amendment Bill and Intellectual Laws Property Amendment Act for the protection of traditional knowledge were assented by the President. The National Credit Amendment Bill was adopted by both Houses of Parliament. We have developed draft policy frameworks on intellectual property and gambling. And the Policy Framework and Bill for Licensing of Businesses Bill developed and public consultations were conducted. An impact assessment study on the Liquor Act and draft policy were developed and the results were incorporated in the draft liquor policy. On the last area of our work, which is under administration, as of the 31st March 2014, the vacancy rate was 9.4% with an employee retention rate of 93.2%. The department recorded 44% of women employed in SMS positions and 2.7% people with disability. We have also managed to achieve to pay all creditors within 30 days as regulated by the PFMA. The department has received an award in 2013 as a top performing government department at the 11th Annual National Business Awards organized by the private sector. We've also received acknowledgement as the second best functioning national department in 2012 according to impact conducted by presidency last year. We have since received the best national department according to impact in 2013. Slide 42 provides some of the achievements against targets in the 2013-14 financial year. We have achieved 84% of all targets and have made significant progress for all the targets that have been partially achieved. Under financial management, the department has spent 98.6% of its total budget, with an underspending of 1.4% in the last financial year. Slide 44 provides an overview of expenditure per program. Moving on to slide 45, this provides an overview of expenditure per economic classification. With regard to the audit outcome for the 2013-14 financial year, the department has received a financially unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General for the last financial year. This slide provides an overview of the progress the department has made in the last four financial years. The Auditor General provides an opinion in three large areas, which is on the financial statements, predetermined objectives, which is performance information, and lastly on compliance. You will note in the last financial year we received a one finding on compliance, and this related largely to supply chain management. Slide 48 provides the corrective steps that the department has taken to correct this finding. These include communication within the department on the procurement requirements, targeted training interventions, an easy-to-follow procurement guide, as well as awareness campaigns within the department. Some of these additional controls reduced the irregular expenditure from 32.9 million from 2012-13 to 6.3 million in 2013-14. Lastly, Chair, looking at the challenges overall that impact the economy and the department, we're looking at poorer manufacturing performance due to slow global growth and strikes in the mining industry. Industrial sectors supported by DTI incentives show growth, while other sectors like plastic, steel, and metal fabrication lagging. Credit-fueled consumption-driven demand is running out of steam. Electricity and water supply shutdowns impact on manufacturing. Sharp escalating administered prices where municipal premiums and pricing anomalies within and between municipalities, higher rail freight and port charges, and the need to build partnerships between government and business to secure much greater progress in upstream mining supply chain and downstream beneficiation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just make a question. This report, to say two things. The one is that we are appreciative of the fact that you do have a qualified, unqualified audit. We look at that and are worried when it is happening. So congratulations on that. But we also want to congratulate you on the award that you received from business in South Africa, which is an objective occurrence. You know, if you only get it from some people who benefits from the work that you're doing directly, it's not the same as when you get it from a very important sector for the Department of Trade and Industry. Please also convey that to your principals. Can we request the members to indicate to the department that when they do have good audits and they do get rewards, that's what they should be doing. And we are endeavoring to improve even further on their performance and therefore engage this report from that perspective. Just in terms of the time frames, would I be correct to say that we have more than enough time? Can we agree that we're going to try and conclude by 12? If we go until 12:15, that's fine. But let's try and conclude by 12 and not just go on because we have time. That's make it a quality engagement. I'm trying to see if there's any hints from honorable members of the Select Committee. Honorable Dikhane? Honorable Tebe? Let's have the two of you and then have a response.
Well, thank you, Chairperson, and my apology for arriving late. I was taking care of some other issues from my office. And to the department, good morning. And a good job well done. I want to join our Chairperson by congratulating you, especially for the report from the Auditor General. Even though there are some red marks there, maybe you would want to explain why these findings. But it is a good job indeed. I normally say if the department is taking care of the poor, there is no way that the department will suffer. That is why you get in the awards. Others are getting a week every day. So I have a question from page 49 under the challenges. The first one, poor manufacturing performance due to slow global growth and strikes in the mining industry. I don't know what is it that the department is intending to do in order to help the people who are striking, because in the area around Sukukuni, I forgot the name of the mine, but they buried somebody because the person was busy mending the wire, and then a big stone came from the mine and hit the person, and the person died on the spot. So they ended up having a fight with the traditional leader because all those sort of things. So it's really hard for the people who are living around the mine. They need help. And the other one. Okay, I'm lost. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll come back if my other question.
Okay. Let's have Honorable Tebe.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm trying to find a sense whether the projected growth in the GDP, what is the likelihood of the volatility moving towards that? Are we able to recover as per the projection as indicated? The second thing is there seems to be inability to breathe life into manufacturing and agriculture. And those are, and if you look at your presentation, we are still dominated by financialization. Your services, and the two pillars of our economy should be able to be resuscitated to a level where we can be able to contribute immensely to our economy. What is the... I know that one of the things that we are trying hard to do is to increase our export base. But are we coming closer? Can the department satisfy us that we are moving towards that direction? Chair, also I'm raising that because your presentation is saying that our export and imports to the world decline in the second quarter of this year. And if we want to draw parallels to the Minister of Finance midterm budget, our responsibility to reduce the debt deficits vis-a-vis growing the economy to the required level, are we moving there? This facilitation for broad-based economic participation through targeted interventions. I've never seen a country that does not intervene deliberately in the economy to turn the economy around. this facilitation cosmetic, or what is it that we want to achieve? So that we don't have a buzzword that we are facilitating and we can't touch and feel the facilitation. Can you state a bit what is it? This creation of fair regulation environment that enables investment, trade and enterprise development also try to prove. I don't know. I feel that our sector is highly deregularized. I know that department is trying so hard to go into that regulation process, but are we moving with the necessary speed? I'm sorry, sir. I'm trying to wrap up. The agro processing from your level as a DTI. Look, if you go to Northern Cape, if you go to the Northwest, if you go to the Free State, those are your possible hub for agro processing growth in the area that we want to create. But we don't see DTI playing an important role in ensuring that this becomes a reality. We were in Northern Cape. You have what DTI has tried to do there, but it's not beneficial to the communities in the nearby localities. The people in the nearby localities, they don't even know what the DTI is trying to do. The interventions that are there in Thank you, Chair. The interventions brought about by the DTI in that sector are trying to somehow try to assist already emerged role players in the business sector. This intervention needs to go down deep to the people so that we can be able to. We can't continue to perpetually support wine production in the Northern Cape when wine production has been supported sufficiently and we don't diversify or create second economies away from wine production. I'm not sure if I'm clear enough, but I think if you don't understand, you can be able to take. And we must appreciate this intervention in the Transnet, which is approximately going to create 30,000 jobs. I think it's welcomed. The marginalized region, how do we then bring them into the mainstream of the national economy? We were in Messina. I see that your presentation is saying your feasibility study in terms of your SEZ is undergoing in that area. But look, you have a conducive environment for your growth of your export in that area. And we don't think that DTI is exploiting that possibility quite well. You still have production which is contributing to your food security in the country in that sense. You still have production which is mainly exported, but you do what you call domestic export again. People in Messina try to export their goods, their material to Gauteng and then from Gauteng outside the country. Why is it happening? Thank you, Chair. I know I'm long. Pardon me. But I've not concluded. I'll come the second round.
Thank you very much. Can I, with the permission of the other members, I've noticed Honorable Kaula and Honorable Suka, Honorable Faber, that we hold you, get a response, then we'll take the three of you after the response. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And thanks to the Honorable Members for the questions. The question from Honorable Dikhale, the ESA Inter-Ministerial Committee, which Minister Davies is part of, that is looking at the
It's called the revitalization of the distressed mining communities. So Minister Davies is part of that committee, which is looking at distressed mining communities. So we are looking at it. We are aware the impact it has on manufacturing, and the DTI is working on that. With regard to the AG's audit report, if you look at the three areas that the AG reports on, it's the financial statements, predetermined objectives, and compliance. If you look at that particular slide, if we have all greens in that area, it's what the AG terms a clean audit. So the department has done relatively well. In fact, it's one of the few departments. When we met the AG and when he presented his audit report, they indicated that the department is extremely close to achieving a clean audit. In fact, they said that we are so close that we should, in the next financial year, really try to achieve this in the current financial year, 14-15. With regard to Honourable Tebe's question, I want to ask my colleague for some assistance, but just in terms of the broad-based the work we're doing in that area. Our Deputy Minister is currently leading a task team to develop black industrialists. We're also creating an initiative to promote black industrialists. So there's a lot of work currently being done in that area. If you look at the incentives within that space, we've got the incentive for small business. We've got the Black Business Supplier Development Program. We've got an incentive program for cooperatives. So there's a lot of work focused on trying to bring the marginalized areas within the economy into the mainstream economy. So there is a lot of work being done, and the Deputy Minister SSEC's his focus as well. With regard to some of the other questions, maybe I'll ask our Chief Economist to maybe.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think the question from Honourable Dikhali around the Sekhukhweni area, you know, one of the things that we would perhaps stress is the need for beneficiation of South Africa's mineral products. And to give you a very simple example, if we export an ounce of platinum, we get about $1,200 for that ounce. If we export a electric vehicle, which is based on a fuel cell, we would get about $50,000. And if we export a electricity generator made from a fuel cell driven by platinum, we would get about $20,000. So at the moment, what we have is essentially a mining economy, and what we really need to do is to move beyond that to begin to add value to our minerals. And that's when the pressure on worker wages would be slightly released, and we might be able to see higher wages that can be carried by the economy and carried by exports of high-value products. So I think that the whole issue of beneficiation and industrialization is really a key focus area for DTI, and it's because we want to see rising wages, particularly for very poor people, and also job creation in those kinds of areas. In terms of some of the questions from Honourable Tebe, in terms of the volatility of growth, I mean, I think our sense is that the global economy at the moment is still in a very bad place. We don't see the economy, the global economy, recovering rapidly. There've been some worrying data coming out of Germany, as well as from China, and so I think we are in a particularly risky and volatile economic space at the moment. I think for South Africa, our focus has got to be again on igniting the economy through industrialization and through adding value locally. To do anything else is simply to export jobs and export value addition opportunities to other parts of the world. So there are a whole range of interventions that DTI has underway already. For example, our focus on industrialization through IPAF, the focus on beneficiation along with the Department of Mineral Resources, the focus on local procurement, where particularly government procurement, it makes no sense for us to be procuring products from other parts of the world. That's essentially government funds flowing out of South Africa and adding to the current account deficit that we know is already significant. So I think those are the really key focus areas for South Africa. I think there was also a question from Honourable Tebe around export issues, and I think what we would highlight is that South Africa's trade balance with Africa is actually a trade surplus at the moment. So we are exporting to the rest of Africa relatively high-value manufactured goods, and we're importing far less from the African continent. So for us, that's a very positive story. It's a story that we need to build on, and it's also a story that we need to repeat when we look at what's happening in the European Union, for example, where the growth rates are relatively low, and there's a fair degree of subsidization of production. So we need to be quite careful that we choose the countries that we seek to prioritize for trade relations very carefully. And DTI's work in developing the African continent and in exporting to Africa is really part of that work. Honourable Chair, if I can just mention very briefly, and I'm sure my other colleagues would want to come in on the agro-processing issues as well. There are two initiatives underway in the Northern Cape. The one is working with FabCos, where DTI signed a memorandum of agreement to roll out small-scale maize mills, as well as to assist investors operating within the broader FabCos framework with investments in agro-processing. And that would be adding value locally. It would be buying feedstock from local farmers. As I understand it, one of the priority areas is around the Douglas part of the Northern Cape. So there is an intervention underway there already. And secondly, about 60% of the projects in the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program, the MCEP, actually goes to the agro-processing sector. So for DTI, agro-processing is a real priority area. There's significant financial resources going into the sector. Of course, we can be doing more, perhaps in the area of cooperatives and black business supplier development, but there are a range of initiatives underway that seek to address the kinds of issues that the Honourable Member is raising. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I know that other members of DTI may wish to add. Honourable Tebe and other members of the Select Committee, who did not help us, can I test you this response that we got, that all of us have this common concern about the agro sector, and we don't have the facts. Would it be fair to ask DTI to give us something in writing where they indicate to us the interventions in monetary terms and what the contribution is towards creating jobs and increasing the livelihoods of people within those communities that are being supported. Would that be something that other members of the Select Committee feel is important to have as well? There's agreement. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's, before we go further, ask if there's any other member of DTI who want to add.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to also add to what the Chief Economist has said, responding to the issue of how we deal with the fiscal challenge versus the need to grow the economy. I think from where we are standing, it's important that in the way that we respond, we continue to invest in the economy, because investing in the economy will assist us to come out of this fiscal challenge much quicker than any other intervention. So for us, it is important that the monies that the state makes available to support industry in order for us to industrialize, in order for us to beneficiate, continues to flow to industry, so that we are indeed investing in the economy and investing in opportunities that the rest of the other sectors of the economy can benefit from, and in that sense, for us it's important, for example, the monies that are made available for incentives, that we continue to incentivize a good value addition type activity in the economy. We continue to incentivize activity in previously marginalized areas through programs such as the SEZ, and we continue to also incentivize other forms of activities that will assist to build the economy. So from our side, we would wish that if there's anyone who wants to support us, that we get the support, that we don't reduce investment in industry, because investment in industry is what is going to get us into a good cycle of ensuring that there's broader development in the country. Then there was a question on the, on what we are doing for new entrants in the economy, because there seems to be a focus only on those people that that are already there, that are emerging and have participated, they are participating in the economy. Through the broadening participation pillar of the department, we've got a number of schemes. The chief economist has spoken to the scheme that supports cooperatives. There's also a scheme that he spoke to that supports black businesses, new black businesses entering the market. And then there's another scheme, the incubator support program, where we are supporting new entrants by incubating them. So we're supporting incubators and that allows new entrants to access the market. Three pillars of that program is that when you are an incubator that is supported by the Department of Trade and Industry, one, of course, you will support, you'll provide training to your incubatees. The second thing is that you have to assure them a market. So we it's not DTI is now a new university. We want you to provide a market for the incubatees. And then the third thing that we also would want is where there's need for certification and all those types of things that sometimes are a barrier, you are also assisting the people to be able to do those things. So in that way, we are assisting new entrants to come into the market. It is our assessment that some of these things, lack of market information, sometimes inability to enter the market because you don't have a market, are the barriers to entry for new entrants. And we continue to look at what else we can do to support new entrants, while we are also supporting the emerging and the big industry, who normally are the ones that provide offtake for the small players, if I may put it like that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I've noticed the other hands. I have also looked at the time, and we are very safe. So please allow me then to take three hands and then take others again. The three hands are Honorable Lond. Can I take you with the next batch? Because it would be Honorable Kawula, Honorable Suka, and Honorable Faba in that sequence.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I've been partly covered, but I still do want to make a comment and maybe a small Anyana question on your slide on page 10. It does not show me a good picture. I'm not sure if I'm reading it well. I want to start by saying that when South Africans lose jobs and when joblessness increases in the country, it is this department that must account, because it is a department that is responsible for ensuring that there is growth in the economy and that there are industries and that people are getting jobs. And what I'm looking at there on slide 10 does not convince me that you are doing a good job from 2012. The balance of trade with the world, it shows a red that is below zero. And from 2012, we started to have exports which are lesser than our imports. My mother taught me that when you when you buy more than what you can sell, then you do not have a healthy kind of situation financially. And this is what is happening in our country. So I've been partly covered, but what I want to know is with your interventions now, because unfortunately this does not show us sector by sector, it's just everything together. I heard in respect of the balance of trade with Africa, it looks good, but the balance of trade with the world is this. Now, with your interventions, are we likely to turn the corner?
Thank you very much, Honorable Shuka.
Chairperson, thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Chair, first place, I appreciate this presentation by TTI, because I was also comparing the notes with the thick book, the annual report. And I was saying to myself, you see, maybe firstly I must commend the department, your leader, by providing us and keeping us updated in terms of your information through our internet. I think this is one department that can communicate in as far as technology is concerned. There's a guy that I now know, which I've not seen, who's always sending us this information. He's very good. I'm keeping I must commend you. You know, almost every day there is something to read on about trade and industry. No, it's quite good. I must commend your collective effort in keeping the nation on its toes in reading what is taking place. Maybe what needs to be done, you know, is to interact. Maybe I think we need as politicians to talk with SABC rather than having at times violent feelings, to talk about our own story in terms of the departments, what they are doing, so as to open up opportunities for South Africans, especially the SMEs, the disadvantaged communities, to see how best, because you give the roadmap into the economy of the country and the opportunities that are there. Maybe we need to take that challenge so that you tweet it a little bit in the SABC so that people can see. Because what hit us most also is because the better part of the community of South Africa we know are in the rural areas. Some are educated, but they don't know how to come into the mainstream. But through your department, I think we can be somewhere. I think we need to pose that challenge. You can take it also to your principal, political principal, this matter. Because that information that you are providing should go to other levels. Radio stations will need to have some slots to talk about these matters. Communication is key. Information is power. Yeah? So I'm saying I'm trying to commend you for what you're doing, but also we need to be innovative to bring everybody in the mainstream, because I understand you do have a challenge to balance, and the balancing act of the international community vis-a-vis the local, especially the two rural areas of South Africa. So as you want to keep up with the international world, but also you've got the pressure here at home. So I'm saying we need to look into that chapter soon. My second point, Chairperson, on the matter, I would hope that we'll see the turnaround strategy on the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. There are some matters that he has raised, around page 67 or so, which I will not go back in terms of the leadership, internal controls. We need to come closer to the party so that we are more stricter. In specific in those areas where he raised them. I'm not going to repeat it because fortunately you know. So we would want to have a turnaround strategy on improving at that level so that all of us take pride of what you are doing. And I commend the strides that you are doing every financial year, because I'm keeping track also in terms of your improvement, how you act. Chairperson, also on the issue of the SEZ, you know, the SEZ, maybe you need to step up the question of monitoring. You know, monitoring is key. You'll open up opportunities, you fund them, but if you don't monitor and go back a little bit to take stock of what has happened in terms of what you've done going forward, I think that's where also we need to step up. We don't know the capacity of the department in doing all this, because there are financial implications also when you talk of the capacity. Treasurer can give you only so much, and yet we want so much. So the question of monitoring is very key to the department to keep up what is obtaining on the ground. My last point, Chairperson, would be, you know, municipalities, for instance, in the Northern Cape, I know we've been there just last week. That's why I would make a reference, not necessarily only because I come from Port Elizabeth. I know we are doing quite a good job, and we'd want to visit as now from another camp, not TTI. TTI and Economic Development would want to visit Kuha because it's also our terrain, and we are having a keen interest in some areas where you've got these projects. But coming back to municipalities in the Northern Cape, raised some concern during our visits that most solar projects, I think it has been raised, are not well received. In fact, there's no information to the local people. And those, some of the people there who are doing business, are a little bit arrogant. You know, they don't want to listen to the local community. They'll tell you, no, go to, I've negotiated, I've talked, I've got an agreement with government. I can't talk to you. When the municipalities, because those solar projects surely are for people, the local people. Now, the element of a little bit of arrogance should be addressed. I want to put it softly here. But in that meeting, it was not nice. You know, it was not nice. Mayors don't understand what is happening. They just see projects. They must catch and chase these projects because communication is not very up to scratch. So can you please step up in that regard for any project in a particular locality? Surely, I was in Koha the other day. The communities there also are struggling because of the wind turbines or whatever. In that area, they are also struggling to get. You are not taking them on board when these projects are coming. Can you please, as they come, because you have the understanding that they will be coming, they will be launched, and so on. They must be on board in some certain instances. I'm happy with your organogram. I know that you did mention about your organogram in terms of the vacancy rate, of which I know it's dynamic. The issue of vacancies and employment, but I think if you keep it under one digit, I think I can be happy with that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Suka, I allowed you to speak a little bit longer because I'm going to ask you to take the chair while I just run to the washroom quickly, please. We are giving opportunity now to Honorable Faber, and then we are hiring feedback from DTI.
Thank you very much. 5 minutes or 2 minutes. Well, Honourable Member Faba, you are recognized.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to start with regular activities in DTI, and it's about cloning, because I think you guys are cloning Minister Davis because he's around about everywhere. I see when we get the email, he's all over the show to do good work for us. So to your minister as well, I really believe that he's doing a great job, and I suppose it obviously then goes down the lines, and this is why you are also getting good reports. So that is a compliment from us. Then Minister Davis spoke about when I look at the footwear cluster on page 18, I see that you've got there the cluster Southern Cape and as well as KwaZulu-Natal. But can faintly remember that Minister Davis once was talking in his budget speech in the NCOP about footwear on the doorstep of Cape Town. Now, I don't know about if it was a factory or something, footwear factory. I'm just not sure, because I was actually thinking maybe I was going to buy myself shoes at this new factory outlet here out of Cape Town, and I'm not seeing this. So I don't know if some of you know about that, perhaps. Maybe you can maybe give me information. I don't know, Western Cape and Southern Cape is a little bit further. If it is Watson's, then I ask to be excused on that. But then in my province on Transnet, we did a provincial week in the R. And as I say, we're not here representing political parties, as you see. We definitely just here for our provinces. And specifically in the Northern Cape, where we had meetings with the communities. And with these promises hanging in the air of building train coaches in the R, the people on the ground are, I don't want to use the word hungry, but they are hungry. They are not seeing this happening. I would like to know how far this is, if you can perhaps tell us, because apparently there was a lot of promises made about this economic boom that will take place and a lot of work, and the people of the R was coming back to us as members of the NCOP on the provincial week and saying, we hear about it and there's a little bit happening, but we don't really see a difference. If you can help us on that. And I'd also like to know if you are at this moment aware of the Northern Cape Economic Development Corridor that are in process of being launched, I suppose, in the next few months, which will start almost just on the southern tip of Namibia with a deep harbour that is a possibility, etc., because of all the minerals in those areas, with a steel meltery, etc. I know it might be more on the economic development side, but I believe that trade and industry, I would just like to know if you have any information on that from your minister, and if there was already anyone negotiating on this, because I really believe that this can make a big difference to the Northern Cape if we start a real economic hub with all these. I've got the whole email on this, but it's really a big revolution in our country. It can actually make the western part of the Northern Cape one of the bigger economic hubs of our country. Thank you. That is all I want to ask.
Thank you very much. I have noticed Honorable Lont, Bauda, but I'm struggling with Honorable Tebe, who wants to make a follow-up. I've noticed you, but let's get a response on the three sets of questions.
Also, the Honorable Member Faba is using the term. He says my minister has been cloned. He's almost everywhere. Seems to me they are cloning him. Do we accept him, that terminology? He has been cloned.
It depends on it depends on who he has been cloned to.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Sukar, with regard to the communication, we in the past had an initiative which was called Taking DTI to the People. So there was a large number of awareness and communication and marketing campaigns in the provinces and in the regional areas. So there was a lot done in the past. There's still a lot being done currently, where the new slogan is Taking DTI to the Factory. So we've got a designated marketing division that markets all DTI's products.
we've done a lot. Sometimes the uptake in the provinces are low. What we have done in the past as well is we've done a lot of radio slots in the rural areas for people in different languages and stuff, for them to understand the different incentives that DTI provides. So we are doing quite a bit. But if the members are aware of any other projects or initiatives within your specific provinces, you can also let the DTI know so that we can also go out and also provide some sort of assistance, guidance on how they can take their projects forward. With regard to the clothing and textile, Minister Davies recently attended, I think it was after the budget speech, it was the House of Monetic, which is they manufacture clothing, suits, and footwear. We provided them assistance to the value of around 30 million rand, and we saved 800 jobs within the House of Monetic. With regard to Honourable Kaula's question with regard to the current account deficit, I know the chief economist will respond, but you have to look at, you have to read it in context with the rest of the world, the global economy. I mean, if the economies in those countries, the US, the EU, is slow and retracting, I mean, it has a direct impact on the South African economy. So, as the DDG of incentives has indicated, all we can do during this time of fiscal constraints is try to invest in this economy, because investment is the only thing that will lead to growth eventually. So it's a tough balancing act, but we need to read it in that context. With regard to the turnaround strategy on the AG's report, the EAS one, the minister and the DG have taken it upon themselves to lead this turnaround strategy. We have also reported the turnaround strategy at the executive board, so things are being taken very seriously within the department. With regard to the SEZ and the monitoring, that's extremely important. I mean, there's a lot of money flowing to these SEZs, and monitoring is key. I mean, you need to get best value for money. And what we've done very well with the previous IDZs is we worked in collaboration with the provinces, where the provinces, like the local, the economic development departments, have worked with the department in terms of managing and appointing boards just to manage those SEZs. So even going forward, all the new SEZs will be done in collaboration with the provinces to monitor and ensure oversight. In fact, the MECs of Economic Development is the executive authority for all these SEZs. So there will be oversight. With regard to Honourable Faber, the Northern Cape Economic Development Corridor. If this, and I know you mentioned an email, I mean, if you could forward it to us as well, we'll look into it, and I think it will be useful for us to see exactly what's been done and to see how we can also assist and advise on the way forward in that. Okay. But I'll hand over to Stephen and my label. And Ms. Sarah Chwanya, our DGG for Corporate Services.
Okay. We'll allow the three of you.
Thank you, Chair. More of a comment to the Honourable Member around the issue of vacancy. And I think the issue, sometimes we tend to focus on vacancy but not appreciating what is it all about. It's about equipping the department with the right people with the right skills. And I think that's what you see manifesting in terms of our performance. We have now, in the annual report that we're tabling, it's belated, but we were at 9.4% vacancy rate. We are now at 6.9. So when you read the vacancy, you also need to look at the turnover. Turnover is the number, you know, the speed at which people leave the department. And we've reduced that. I think when we reported with the annual report, we were at 6.8. We are now at 5.6. And the converse of that
it's your retention rate. So our retention rate, the rate at which we retain people, is at 94.4. And that's why, and that must manifest in improved performance. And I think that's how you should see this. So thank you very much.
When Kumla left your department, how much of the percentage did she take with her? Kumla is now our DG in small business development, and she comes from DGI.
Thanks, Chairperson. If I can respond perhaps to the honourable members' comments and questions on the trade front. I think the CFO has alluded to it already. We do have to consider it in the context of the global financial crisis. And actually, if you look a little bit further back to 2007-2008, then South Africa's trade performance was quite significantly better. But it's important to then drill down into some of the sectoral detail that you refer to. And what we would find then is that around about 60% of South Africa's exports are accounted for by mineral products. That's a very significant percentage. So we're much more an Australia-like country or a Chile or Peru-like country than a big manufacturing exporter like Germany or even China. And in fact, what we saw in the run-up to the global financial crisis was the rising price of commodities is actually what was driving South Africa's export performance. So there are a couple of challenges around that kind of export profile, key of which is that when commodity prices go down as they have at the moment, then our trade balance immediately goes very rapidly into deficit. And essentially this suggests that what we really need to do is to ensure that our manufactured export performance rises quite dramatically. However, there are a couple of challenges with that, first of which is the volatility of the exchange rate, and I'm sure the DTI has on a number of occasions over the last 20 years raised the issue of the volatility of the exchange rate, as well as sometimes its overvaluation. If we don't get that balance right, firstly that the exchange rate is relatively stable, and secondly that it's stable at a relatively competitive level, then it's incredibly difficult to build a sustainable manufacturing export base in any country, but particularly in South Africa. Linked to that, of course, is the imports that we've seen over the last 3 to 4 years, for example, chicken imports. And as I'm sure colleagues would know, growing chickens is not a difficult business to be in, particularly in a range of provinces where there's a strong link to the rural economy. The chicken sector is a sector that South Africa has to be competitive in. But what we've seen in the past is subsidized imports. We've also seen that our tariff protection has not always been adequate, and that's really one of the reasons that DTI has advocated for raising tariffs on, for example, chicken imports. I think that a second area that we really would need to address much more aggressively than perhaps we have in the past is the issue of procurement. The government budget is about R1 trillion a year. If there's leakage in terms of that budget that's going to support imported products, then as government we need to take a really firm stance on it. And DTI certainly has taken that stance. Colleagues and members will know that there are a range of designations that have taken place over the last couple of years. There's a commitment from government to try and ensure that 75% of all government procurement is from local producers, not local sources necessarily, but local actual manufacturers, producers on the ground. What we do see is relative reticence on the part of the private sector to agree to a similar target. So if you look at what's driving the current account, yes, there may be areas where government spending and government procurement is leading to a small increase in imports, but the largest chunk of what's driving the current account is actually imports by the private sector. And so the initiatives that DTI has taken around Proudly South Africa, around Buyback South Africa, are really critical in ensuring that there's commitment from both government and the private sector to buy buy locally. Otherwise, I fear that the exchange rate, sorry, the current account deficit won't be addressed sustainably. And as we know, South Africa is relatively vulnerable because we have both a current account deficit as well as a fiscal deficit. But driving the current account is really the relatively weak economic growth, subsidized imports coming into South Africa, and perhaps the lack of commitment to local procurement. Those are areas that are receiving direct attention within DTI, although, of course, we would like to see a much broader engagement around what do provinces do, what do departments in provinces do to ensure there's local procurement, and critically, what does the private sector do in partnership with government to really commit to local procurement. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Maybe just to add to what Stephen has indicated in terms of the key interventions that Honorable Kaula was asking about. He has already referred to the fact that the reason we have the trade balance that we have is because of the history associated with the trade baskets of South Africa. We trade more with commodities and natural products and then import high-value products. So what we are trying to do is to ensure that we diversify export markets, but also there's a focus on diversifying the export baskets. And the Industrial Development Work Program is trying to deal with the diversification of the export basket by promoting value addition. With regards to the diversification of markets, there are two interventions that we are currently busy with. It's about looking for market access for South African products. And what we are doing in that front, as we've indicated in the presentation, Africa is a key growth market for us, for our exports. That is the only market where we have a trade surplus. We're currently busy negotiating a tripartite free trade area between COMESA, SADC, and the EAC. And that market will provide a market of a population of 620 million people that also allows us to tap into a market of 1.2 trillion in terms of GDP size. So it's a significant market for us. And that will be a building block for a broader continental free trade area, which will cover the whole 54 countries in the continent, which would mean that there will be a free access for South African products to the whole continent. And we are trying to deal with ensuring that there's coherence in terms of trade regulations as part of that engagement. The second issue is that South Africa is a services economy. And in all our trade agreements, especially in the continent, we've been in the past focusing on trading goods. We're now busy in SADC negotiating opening up market access for services. And so far, as we've indicated in the presentation, we have submitted offers on the financial as well as the communication services. But the key areas that have been prioritized includes tourism, construction services, energy services. So it's another opportunity to open up exports and create jobs in South Africa. With regards to the BRICS, we are, again, when we trade with the BRICS, it's more trading in commodities. With the intervention that we currently have during South Africa's chairmanship, we said the key focus should be around increasing trade of value-added products with the BRICS countries. We have identified a number of products, and we're engaging with BRICS countries to ensure that we have better opportunities to trade on specific high-value products. So those are the key, some of the initiatives that we are currently busy with to ensure that we are able to deal directly with the issue associated with the negative trade balance. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do you want to follow up on that, madam? Briefly, please.
Briefly, Chair. Just to respond to your last question in terms of what Pumla took with her when she left. Chair, of course, in terms of our incentive scheme, the new department creates a lot more focus on small enterprises. So the work that we were doing to support small enterprises would be the work that will then move to the Small Enterprise Development Department. That will include the work that we are doing right now on the cooperatives, so the CIS scheme, would also be moving to the new department. Similarly, so aspects of the Black Business Supplier Development Program. What this does is that it allows us also to now focus on some of the issues that were raised, including new entrants who may not necessarily be small, but they are new. That is why we are now focusing on the development of Black industrialists and working now on developing an incentive program to support Black industrialists. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will give an opportunity for the last contributions from the honourable members in the following sequence: Honourable Lond, Honourable Valda, and then Honourable Tele.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to get open here. A few things, okay. Just on your presentation, I mean, I like the movie The Long Walk to Freedom, but you said it cost 239 and earnings was 23. I think just add into that what was the international earnings. Because I'm sure there's international earnings, but putting just that there, it doesn't really reflect that well. And then add it to that, what was the international earnings? Okay. Then this has been raised with you, but I mean, you put down the agreement on page, I think, 34, the conclusion and implementation of the South Africa-Cuba Agreement on Economic Assistance. What research was done before we gave over $350 million to Cuba? I mean, what benefits are there for our country? Because giving us that amount of money, it's a lot. So we need to make sure that we get at least that back and more. Okay, two of my colleagues touched on the KMUS situation. I'm sure we're going to follow up later when we get our report from the Oversight Week as well. But there's something that really, and I'm sure that's not the only one, but that's a cooperative that is not reaching its full potential. And I'm worried that if we didn't go there, how long it would have taken to find out what the problems were there. And also then my question added to that is, what is the department doing to make sure that all of these cooperatives across the country are closely being monitored and not just asking a municipality or someone else what's going on? Because a lot of the problems there, there's some disagreements on that, but I think some of the basic services that need to be delivered. So if you ask the municipality what's the problem, they're not necessarily going to give you the right answer. So actually going out and making sure that you take ownership and hands-on with what's going on there. South Africa, we don't need to fall behind in the manufacturing. I mean, there's a lot of companies that departed South Africa, and there's a, again, I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard it, but the so-called red tape bill that's on the table for this year. Those sort of things, it actually prevents us from going. And I need this good attention, but there's some serious aspects in that bill that's concerning. Now, colleagues in the National Assembly is taking that up, and I'm sure we'll have another platform, but I'm just putting it there. It goes like that, and especially the worrisome aspect of it, that's not helping us. And this is policy, but you go, National Assembly have touched on that, you know about that. And then, again, this is going down the line. The Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, there was oversight to the officers there, and you are aware of the situation with the runners and getting paid money and making sure that they then get sped up in the process. Now, there's a few sides to this, but basically people that's coming in, starting up, and they don't have that extra cash to actually pay on that, that's also a disadvantage, and it's just plain old bribery that's going on there. And there's officials that's taking part in this. So what steps are you being put in place to prevent those kind of actions taking place? Because that becomes part of the culture in an organization. If you're not aware of it, then we can give you more information on it, but I'm sure you saw that as well. I'm sure that's all for now.
Thank you, Honourable Lord. Honourable Lord.
Thank you.
Can I, before you go, just apologize for Honorable Dikale. She did tell me before the meeting started that she has to also attend another meeting, and she therefore recused herself to do that with an apology. Honorable Banda.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Bismillah. I acknowledge the presence of our Supreme Forces, and I greet all of you with Assalamu Alaikum. On the slide 11, strategic goals, I've noticed that the department acknowledges its social responsibilities, but later on in the presentation, there's very little that mentioned about the role of the department with regard to your social economic responsibilities with these investments. What I'd like to know is what part do you see yourselves playing in this, and do you see a role for yourselves? If you see no role for yourselves, why not? And if you do see a role for yourself, what is that role, and give us some idea of what that role is. And this brings me immediately to my next point, which is when you began the presentation, you did speak immediately about the overseas markets and our dependence on the dynamics of overseas economics, and this is our biggest concern, that we mustn't rely too much. We must try and build our own market here in South Africa. We do have 50 million people in this country, and I think only about 10 million people have access to motor vehicles. The rest of the 40 million are using public transport. Now, we have a huge automobile industry in this country, right? If we pay decent salaries to our people will be able to afford motor vehicles, and we'll be less dependent on markets overseas. That's just an example of what we are talking about, but this applies right across the board in our economics in this country. Let us build our own market here. We build our own market in this country, we will become less dependent, and that will impact very positively on your department. I'm going to go on to slide number 34, where you spoke about, I think you call it AGOA, something with African growth opportunity, something. Please explain a bit more. And you said that we are having a difficulty here. I'm thinking specifically with Africa is an important market for us, and our trade relations with Africa, and what seems to be the challenges there. If there is there something that this select committee can do to assist in that regard? You mentioned, I think you called it FASIM in Mozambique, and you said that we came third. I want to know why did we come third and not first? And then this brings me to it has already been mentioned about the cost of the incentive programs. Now, we have costs. What are the benefits? We'd like to see, for our purposes, maybe not for others, but I think especially for our purposes, what is the cost of these programs, these incentives, and what has been the resultant outcomes, especially with regard to job creation. But, so we can look at these, and it gives us a better opportunity, we are better informed to say, well, this is the areas that we need to look at, because our results are more positive in those areas, and let us look at those programs. I think we mentioned something like this as well to the Department of Small Business Development. Okay, also monitoring the performance, and this also we mentioned, how are you monitoring the performance in these various incentives? Give us an idea, give us a bit more detail on this, so that we can, it assists us to support you guys as well, right? Okay, when it comes to the Auditor General's report, it's a good report, but there are areas that the Auditor General mentions that needs attention. And I'm thinking specifically with regard to the irregular expenses. You still had something like, I think, 6 million rand. What is being done about this? And I think that is number 25 in the Auditor General report. And then number 27, where he speaks about your leadership and the lack of oversight. I'm thinking specifically of whether the capacity is there. It's also with regard to financial and performance management. So what is the department, what is the capacity within the department to handle this? Because, you've broken away now. You have a part of your department that's gone now to the small business development. But is there anything else specifically that of capital transfer and capital transfer tax. Now, this is going to impact negatively on your department because you guys can do as much as you like and build all these beautiful industries and so on, but if there's a lot of capital outflow out of this country, what is your department, how much of concern do you have about this, and what is your department doing to ensure that this type of evasion, tax evasion, whatever you want to call it, what you are going to do to ensure that this is kept to a minimum? And then finally, I want to say that I heard a lot of praise on your minister, Mr. Rob Davies, I think, the Honourable. I want to say that I'm sure that Mr. Rob Davies, the Honourable Mr. Rob Davies himself, will agree with me when I say that I'm sure that his success is dependent on all of you guys. It's the praise must go to all of you as a department as a whole, not only those of you sitting here, but the other guys who are not here as well from your departments. So I want to congratulate all of you as a whole. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable Tebe, you have been given an opportunity before, and therefore I can request now for you to be brief. I didn't ask any of the other members if I'm mentioning it.
Thank you, Chair. I want to agree with you, Chief Economist, that tariffs are playing a critical role in what we want to do, and the department has done exceptionally well in that. However, we can improve, and I know that you can agree with me on that. Can I request, just as a matter of emphasis, on what was said by Honorable Lord, the cooperative that we saw last week when we did our oversight week dealing with the presence. I'm glad that you are raising issues of access, but can our staff assist you with the relevant information so that you assist them with the market penetration? Because that's the only thing that is keeping them away from struggling for production, but also penetrating the market so that they can be able to compete. So the competitive, there's even something that I call labor brokering in that. Because there's somebody who was acting, there was a company that was acting as a middleman in between them, and the poor people have been sitting on that land for ages. Their grandfather was involved in that land, and they are still holding on to that land. They are even expanding, and there's no market penetration. Please assist them. You'll forgive me, I'm a layman. But FDIs, to me, they should bring about job creation, economic development, infrastructural development. What we saw in Northern Cape, your green energy, solar, the Spaniards are coming here and they're getting all the land, they're doing that. No job creation for our own people. You do that, they go back to Spain and get contractors to come and manufacture small things for them. My understanding is that even when you have a struggling company, you must be able to bring about capacity into that company. It's your role, if already company is existing in the market. And we think that you can be able to come in there. Foreign direct investment in this land must contribute and create conducive, because we are creating a conducive investment environment for them. If you go to Mozambique now, you don't need to ask anybody about FDIs in that country. You see it. Incubator program, I know that I can speak on behalf of my province, the Northwest. You've done well in the precious metal environment. You've incubated one of the women-led business in that sense. But you can do more. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we get the responses from the department? I see the bureaucracy. Yeah. If the CEO says you speak, then even if I want her to speak, you will speak. Continue, madam.
Yes, Chair. maybe just to start with the question on the way that we are presenting the figures on the incentives. That it may not be as clear what the benefits are in the way that we've presented it. And I'm looking at it now, it actually does look like that, because we've just front-loaded what we have disbursed, but we are not telling you what the benefits are. But I think maybe for the benefit of the members, we will improve this in the next round when we present. But for the benefit of the members, I think maybe it's important to also share with you that in the way that we manage our incentives, generally, the way that we strengthen our monitoring is that we will pay you based on you achieving agreed upon milestones. If you haven't achieved those milestones, we are not going to pay you. So that is how we monitor that the milestones are achieved. Of course, the incentive regime that we have targets various, I'll call them pressure points in the market that we believe we need to incentivize in the market. For example, issues of job creation. It's not all incentives that are geared towards job creation. But for those that we know that we want to target job creation will be one of those indicators that we will be looking at as a basis for payment. So if you haven't created the targeted number of jobs, we will, for example, not be able to pay you. Then there are other key indicators we'll look at. There's in investment in new technologies. So if you haven't been able to also invest in those new technologies, we won't pay you. But in the way that we are presenting it here, we are hiding that important level of detail that we will bring across. The work that has now migrated to small enterprises on cooperatives. There were a number of issues that had become serious concerns with regards to cooperatives and their mortality rates, the rate at which they were just finishing. One of them were the relationships between the members of the cooperatives, that when they become sour, then the entire cooperative is held ransom and it won't be able to succeed. For that, before the work migrated, we had worked on establishing a tribunal that will assist the members to resolve their issues. And I'm sure when the Department of Small Enterprise come next time, they will be telling you more and more about how, through the tribunal, they've been able to assist with reducing the mortality rate of cooperatives. And then there are other streams of work that we do to assist them with market penetration. And one of those things that we will do would be through our EMEA scheme, and our sector-specific support program, where we will expose them to markets. In the main, it was markets outside of South Africa, but increasingly we were looking at what is it that we are doing to also assist them to access markets in Canada. It is indeed important that we start creating our own internal markets. And I think the chief economist started talking about this when he was talking about the work that we have done on designation. And that is government coming out and starting to create an internal demand for products in order to support the production of those products locally. And he also did mention the importance of the business sector, private sector also coming on board supporting procuring locally as another way that the department is trying to also spur internal demand. And then on the issues of the cost of our incentives, and just ensuring that we are not throwing good money to bad projects, as I said, when we any incentive program, we will determine upfront what we want to achieve, and what we want to achieve is the basis upon which we will give you the money. It may be important that maybe at some stage, Chair, if you would agree that we would come here and then we will detail to the committee all our incentives, the pressure points that the incentives want to respond to, and then how we are monitoring payments that are dispersed through our incentive scheme. Thank you.
I am particularly grateful because you've not spoken before, but she's been struggling to make a point. So can we get her, and then we get the two gentlemen as well, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'll respond to two issues that were raised, Chuba as well as AGOA. With regards to Chuba, Honorable Lund, the agreement is such that the 350 million will not be given to Chuba per se, but it's about sourcing products in South Africa. So it's about also one of those mechanisms of boosting our industrial development as part of our economic cooperation agreement with Chuba. So it includes issues like sourcing of seeds and all sorts of agricultural products for Chuba. So that is the bit. So there will be benefits to South Africa. With regards to AGOA, AGOA is a unilateral market access scheme by the U.S., the United States of America. It provides unilateral market access to specific African countries, about 40, and the issue now is that it expires in September 2015, and hence we are lobbying for the extension of AGOA by another 15 years. And the other issue that is under consideration is discussions within the U.S. of possible migration of some African countries out of AGOA, and South Africa is one of those countries that some constituencies in the U.S. feel South Africa is more developed and should not be a beneficiary of AGOA. So we're lobbying very hard to have AGOA extended, but also have South Africa included in AGOA as a beneficiary. We've got key sectors that are currently benefiting in AGOA, including our auto sector. So if you are graduated, then there will be implications for our exports to the U.S. But another issue that is a bit of pressure on South Africa is what we've currently concluded, the Economic Partnership Agreement with the EU, which gives better access for EU products to the SACU market, of which South Africa is part, and some constituencies in the U.S. feel that one of the conditions for AGOA and GSP is that any arrangement with a third party should not disadvantage U.S. products in a specific market that is a beneficiary of the two schemes. So, which puts pressure on us to possibly look at what is it that we'll have to pay in order to be kept in AGOA. But there are continuous discussions between South Africa and the U.S. to try and ensure that South Africa is kept in AGOA and AGOA continues in its current form. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Can we have you, please?
Thank you, Chair, and the members. I think I want to address two issues. One, I think that was also raised by Honorable Feba, which probably has not really been addressed about the anxiety in India about what's happening with the Transnet contracts and things like that. I think at the highest level, we need to assure members that in the rolling, what we call it, the rolling stock procurement, and also in the renewable resources procurement, there are actually localization targets that have been set. So when we're actually talking about the Transnet procurement and the PASA procurement, one thing that we are sure is that a designated percentage, 65%, is going to be in South Africa. Our challenge then is then to try for that to filter down to what we usually call local to site, that every corner of South Africa can actually get a bit of the action. There are a few challenges that members would need to acknowledge with regards to that. One is about the volumes, that it might not be viable for the volumes to be in each and every area. The other one is certification. Let's say, for instance, if somebody is going to procure something for a locomotive, a passenger locomotive, there are several conditions that need to go into this. One of it, for instance, can be insurance. So if you are going to be a supplier in that chain, you need to be certified, because end of day, the first, the OEM has to issue insurance on that part. And one of the successes that we have had now is that we have suppliers in South Africa who, when they become certified, let's say to supply a part on a GE locomotive, they actually become a global supplier. Our challenge then is to have that supply in Boxberg, in DR, in every other place. It becomes a challenge. But we take that as a challenge, that how do we filter down the benefits of designation to each and every area. With regard to the solar, I think the Honorable Member Tebo was talking about, can we see the SGI? Is it filtering down? It again still the same thing, because it's a new initiative, it's a new industry that is actually building up. The volumes are still, they're still a challenge, because we cannot afford, sometimes it's not viable to have factories in each and every area. What we also want to assure members is, and DOE is actually also the leader in this, what we want to assure members is that the level of localization in renewable energy is actually going up from round to round. I think we are now on round 4. So as we get much of that, there is the likelihood that it will filter down to each and every area in South Africa. But the point really is there are some jobs where we cannot expect people to come from maybe out into garment to concrete and land clearing. That's concerns in that area are noted. Thank you.
Please proceed, sir.
Okay. Yes,
can we have him?
Thanks, Senator. Yes, just to add, in terms of what my colleagues have been mentioning, I think we also clear as a department, linking more to the question from the Honorable Member around social development, that yes, we would seek and would want to have this growth of our economy through the many interventions we have, but also fundamental to that, and also clearly articulated in our objectives, is to achieve this inclusive growth in all of this. And in doing so, we've also sought to, you know, reconsider and look at our BEE Act and its codes, and we've done a revision to these, and to sort of like see that BEE is closely aligned to the thinking of growing the economy, yes, through industrialization. And you would see with the revisions that ideally have been made now, there's more emphasis on your enterprise and supplier development, you know, enhancing local businesses to be able to participate well in the economy, and utilizing, obviously, private sector and stimulating private sector to participate in these initiatives to develop enterprise, develop smaller businesses. And also, we've also looked at, you know, improving on skills development as an element and enhancing that, and we've seen that as a need. And also closely linked to that is not forgetting ownership. But in actually this review of the BEE codes is also to speak to a matter that most might be considering and thinking that BEE really has been seen as more passive shareholding and not necessarily speaking to the core issues of the economy in terms of economic participation of the majority of this country. So we've sought to do that. But in doing so, we've not left out, you know, certain elements on the codes on social economic development. Those we've retained because we feel private sector and us, we've got a responsibility to develop our communities, and we've still retained it within our BEE codes and our Act. And just lastly, in terms of the question that was raised around cooperatives, as it was clearly mentioned, is that that function, yes, has moved to small business development. But we are clear that, you know, when we speak of cooperatives, we don't necessarily mean small. You know, cooperatives ideally should speak to mass and should be big. And we also anticipating areas of collaboration, obviously, with our fellow department on the area. But it's also too important to note that, as was mentioned in our slides, I think slide 39, we have made amendments to our cooperative act, that is to also include and make provision for a cooperative development agency. You know, a focused entity that is to focus on capacity building for cooperatives, you know, closely working with the provinces and understanding the dynamic and all issues that pertain to cooperatives within the provinces. And also, and obviously the tribunal that has been mentioned by my colleague. So, and also closely linked to there was work that we were undergoing that has not stopped, where we work closely with economic development. We work with small business and the department, and our department, to look at a couple of game changers, you know, in terms of how we currently intervening and supporting small business and cooperatives. Now, that has gone in as far as the framework and the approach to change the game has been endorsed by MINMAC, which is obviously our ministers and our MECs, and we continue to work together, and they are all required to, as part of our monitoring, to produce reports linked to those game changes. How are you intervening on a provincial level? So it would be, you know, good to take note of the comments that have been mentioned, most specifically on the Northern Cape, and to cite that, and to see improvement. So yeah, that's basically it.
Thanks very much. Please.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Honourable Terry raised some really important issues around FDI, and maybe I can respond in part to that. I mean, I think it is always the case that you have to look at FDI for what it is. It may well be that a company comes in, brings in new technology, introduces new working practices, etc. But I've heard of the Spanish invasion. I've heard it called the Spanish invasion with regards to the solar project. And part of the reason why DTI has been very firm about arguing the need for designations is, in fact, to avoid that. If you look across the rest of Africa, you'll see a range of infrastructure projects where countries, including China and many others, are investing in infrastructure with the particular country involved, but many of the people that are working there are in fact not locals, and there's very little backward integration into the industrial capabilities in those countries. And I think as DTI, we're very clear that FDI has to bring something to the table. It has to bring new technology. It has to bring new markets, new working practices, etc. And so I think we do have to have a balance in terms of how we look at some of these FDI projects. But I think also our designations and our insistence that there be local procurement around a range of these kinds of projects is precisely because we want to make sure that there's good embedding of that investment in local communities and in South Africa more generally. In terms of the M&E questions that were raised by Honourable Fowder, I mean, I think it's important to mention that the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation has a national multi-year evaluation plan. The DTI, as part of that, has to have a multi-year evaluation plan within the department, and my colleagues from the incentives section will no doubt refer to a number of incentives that are being evaluated, including the business process services incentive that was evaluated in the previous financial year. The SPI and the MIA programs are being evaluated at the moment, and in all cases, certainly in all four of those cases, those reports have to go to the DG's economic cluster. From the DG's economic cluster, it goes to the Cabinet Committee. From the Cabinet Committee, it goes to full Cabinet. So there's really detailed interaction around, are the incentives achieving their goals? What are the costs associated with those incentives? What are the benefits, etc.? I'm sure that certainly for the programs that are evaluated through DPME, those final reports will be public documents. Intending to foster debate around whether the particular programs are actually having the desired impact or not. So certainly those are going to be made available. In terms of the issue around capital controls and capital transfer tax as as I think Honourable Member Bader referred to it. I think, again, it's an issue that as government we need to be quite careful about. We have exchange controls at the moment. Some analysts might argue that they are too onerous. Other analysts might argue that, in fact, they're not strong enough. But I think the reason they're there is partly to ensure that we don't see big flights of capital out of South Africa when economic conditions change as they do in any economy. So I think we, although I don't think there's a process to evaluate the viability of implementing a capital transfer outflow tax, I think that the department is nuanced in its view on these kinds of matters and would want to look quite carefully at whether further liberalization of our capital controls regime is going to have a positive economic benefit for the country, or whether we are simply trying to follow an international standard or an international view on the level of capital controls that we should have. I think in DTI's case, we would always want to look at what the actual impact is and what the rationale for having some of these capital controls in place, or for liberalizing them, whether that rationale is really there or not. So I think we tend to be quite nuanced about that. Lastly, Honourable Teve, in terms of the project that you referred to in the raisin sector, I think we have an established channel for ensuring that the department does prioritize and assist where companies, cooperatives, etc., are facing challenges, and so perhaps through the parliamentary liaison officer, we can put the company or the cooperative in touch with the agro-processing sector desk at DTI, which is quite well resourced to be able to assist and certainly assist with marketing support and looking at which markets are growing at the moment. So thanks, Jay.
I think the CFO would want to have the last word on behalf of the team.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'd just like to say thanks to the committee members for allowing us this morning to present the department's performance and financial results. The questions were really appreciated, and I would also like to thank the team for their value and their comments with regard to the questions that were received. But I think overall, as a department, we are quite aware of the challenges that are facing the economy. We are aware of the serious taxes and the revenues that are coming to this economy. And what we are trying to do is, trying to see how best we address those pressure points. And we do have a competent team, and we go along, we'll try to see how best we address these issues. So we are continuously trying to address a lot of things that are happening, but as I said, with your assistance and guidance and oversight, we will try to achieve what needs to be achieved within this government. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Just on the last point, what needs to be achieved in this government? We appreciate that. In our oversight visit last week, we experienced that many of the leaders in provincial government and local government could benefit from engagement with departments of government. Now, when we talk about the fifth administration and business unusual, we are saying you may not have done it before, but we need to look at how, if we are serious about growing the economy, we then engage with those people, because we've mentioned to you the cooperative in Camus, but we've experienced exactly the same when we engage with the municipalities in the Northern Cape, as well, interestingly, as with the municipalities in Musina, in Northern, in Limpopo. When I said Northern, I realized that it's not Northern province. In Limpopo, the district mayor, in both instances, would welcome an opportunity to just talk to somebody from DTI who's in leadership
just a call to say, Mayor, in what way can we help you? Is it can we give you information? The same type of information that you're giving to us. To conclude that point, we are saying, as a select committee, that we are not doing good enough in terms of inter-government relations. And you are part of government, in a department of government, and we would therefore want to encourage you, without being prescriptive, to explore how you could also contribute towards improving such relations. We want to applaud you for your presentation here. We're not trying to be nice to you or to the minister. What we do find as a select committee is that you come here prepared and you bring people that can really help us to understand. There's a whole range of questions that are still not posed, which will come up during the course of our reflections. And we know that we have the space to raise it with you through your through Saroj. I've forgotten the title, Saroj. Can I request that maybe you don't leave immediately so that we can shake your hands when you leave and ask you some of those other things as well? Because there's just one task before us, which is the adoption of the minutes of the last meeting. Can I say to the colleagues that we are meeting next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, as the select committee again. The page one of the minutes is the names. The page two was the opening and welcome remarks, the proceedings. Then we had the briefing on the national tourism sector strategy, the heritage, cultural, and rural tourism strategies. On the page three, it is captured differently. You'll notice from how I raised the concern yesterday. Here they talk about deliberations and comments from the committee. Right? So, Honorable Bauda, when you say that we must not privatize, it becomes a comment and not necessarily a decision of the committee. With those,
it's also a reminder, Chairperson, to one and all, of the direction that we need to go to.
You can do the reminder, yes. You can do the reminder. Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Zuka, seconded by Honorable Laund. Thank you very much, colleagues. I just need to alert you, in the final point, that I will be debating on Friday, and many of the things that we've picked from DTI will be part of that. But I want to urge you, all members, that if you have not seen Agenda 2063, the booklet from the African Union, I found it to be a very interesting and informative booklet. And many of the things that DTI is doing as they're talking, for me it was to say, how does it fit into this Agenda 2063? That it is quite true that we are part of Africa, and what we're going to find is that we're going to have to compete much more with Africa. The fact that we have a trade surplus with Africa is not necessarily a good thing. But the points that have been raised by honorable members here about how do we reposition ourselves so that we can create better opportunities, better lives, and growth in our economy for our people is going to be something that may change within the next 5 years, where we need to compete,
not only with countries in Europe, but also with some countries in Africa. So I just thought that I should mention it. I don't know. Do you have copies of that, Agenda 2063? So there, Sarosh is prepared to help us to acquire copies thereof. Thank you very much. I declare the meeting closed. I was almost going to say, can we close it in prayer? Sarosh?
Thank you.